Reptilian seems to have a bad connotation here. People are afraid of reptiles. Let's just call them saurians. Let's just call them like dinosaurs from an Earth that did not get clobbered by an asteroid, and they were able to evolve and found a means of coming here.
What if some of that shit is so big it can't be moved?
Is that what you're saying, Ross? Is that what you've been
That's
told?
exactly what I'm saying.
How big is big?
Big. So big, they built a building over it in a country outside of the United States of America.
I was very fortunate to fly out to Florida and sit down with Oak Shannon, who's the former special projects manager for Los Alamos National Labs and a pretty key component in the Admiral Wilson leaks, for anyone who's familiar with the Admiral Wilson leak story. And I'll talk a little bit more about that for anyone who doesn't know. But he, as a Los Alamos National Lab guy, was like, well, you know, our working group, we basically came to the conclusion this is higher dimensional objects coming into a lower dimensional plane. So you're only seeing a slice. You're seeing a slice of something that's far more complex and can't really be perceived on our reality. So our brain has to fill in the gaps.
They're out in the middle of the ocean, and a sub came up, and they were meeting one somewhere, you know, and they said that sub went down and they watched it fire a missile. They said it was probably one of the first sub underwater missile firings that had happened, because this was, you know, this that's it's not something that we've been doing since the Second World War. Anyway, so he said after all that, you know, they saw it and they thought, wow, this is wild, you know. And then and they were getting ready to go about their activities, and he said that a this huge craft, he said, he described it to me. He said the other thing was two city blocks. He's a country boy, but he said it was two city blocks, and it hovered over them, no noise. And he described it as it pulled up, and he said you could see like something similar to portals or something on the around it. And you know, it's the classic craft that you would, you know, the saucer thing.
In a saucer shape, yeah.
Yeah. And then he said just like that, it just disappeared.
Actually, all my passion for space started in 1983, after a UFO encounter. When I had to decide what to do in life, that particular event was what led me on the path in which I'm now.
I was briefed at our Pentagon because I'd asked some questions there a few years ago, and was briefed a high-level officer on what I knew, and he said, well, I don't know about that, but I will find out. And he called me a few weeks later and said, you're right on, these things are real. I should be in charge of that, but I'm not.
And then finally, are you aware of a document that appeared around 2019, sometimes called the Admiral Wilson memo or EW Notes memo?
I am not.
You're not.
Are you tracking?
I'm not personally aware of that. Okay. This is a document in which, again, I'm not commenting on the veracity. I was hoping you would help me with that, in which a former head of DIA claims to have had a conversation with a doctor and claims to have sort of been made aware of certain contractors or DoD programs that he tried to get fuller access to and was denied access to. So you're not aware of that.
I'm not aware, Congressman.
In my 10 seconds remaining, then, I guess I just would ask, Mr. Chairman, unanimous consent to enter that memo into the record.
I think it's important that we just get your side of this on the record. So I would just like to be able to ask you, first of all, whether or not you personally know Dr. Eric W. Davis.
Yeah. I didn't work with him day in and day out, but I did work with him. I know him fairly well.
And do you personally know Admiral Thomas R. Wilson?
Yes, I do. But again, I know him, and of course, I know of him. I read somewhere that his response was, "Oak who?" And I thought that was kind of funny. As I mentioned to you, I consider myself eminently forgettable. I'm sure that my memory of him is stronger than his memory of me because he's, he became a flag officer. I went off and did weird things on top of a mesa in New Mexico. So,
did Admiral Wilson get in contact with you in 2001 or 2002, inquiring into the background and overall trustworthiness of Dr. Eric Davis?
Earlier than that.
Was it earlier than that? My apologies.
2001. I had had a heart attack and had actually died on the ICU table. And had my own out of body experience, by the way. I got this phone call, and it was from Admiral Wilson. And he asked me, now, this was not a short conversation. I was recuperating. Mm-hmm. I was able to carry on this conversation on the phone, but I wasn't able to do much else at that point. And we had a discussion, and one of the things he wanted to know was, could he trust Eric Davis? And I think he may have even mentioned Hal Putoff and one or two other people. And I mentioned that, yes, I believe that Eric Davis was an honorable and conscientious scientist, and that he would honor any restrictions the Admiral might put on him.
Brett Tingley from The Drive did a brilliant series of articles on Salvatore Pais, following the entire story through his inventions, through the testing, through who was funding it, why were they funding it. And I did an interview with Brett a number of years ago. He's not really part of the UFO research community anymore. He's kind of taken a step back.
Right.
But he was a great journalist. In fact, he was how I got linked up with Salvatore Pais. But, you know, in his reporting, it was demonstrated that essentially, they did initial tests. The patent office refused these inventions because they were outside the norm of possibility, at least, from their right. perspective. It was like, we don't have this tech.
Right.
And then Salvatore Pais's CO, his commanding officer, basically forces these things through the patent office, saying they're actionable. They are already operational. Right. Key word is literally written in some of these documents, operational.
Right.
And then they do testings without Salvatore Pais present, and say that it's not operational, and they bin it.
I do not think anybody knows what's really going on. I don't think the government knows. I don't think anybody knows. But you're probably familiar with Jung's essay, UFOs, a modern myth of things seen in the sky. I think he had it right. I think these are not, alien ships piloted by, aliens. The thing is, nobody actually knows what they are, but I don't think that's what they are. I think your intuition is correct. There's something that exists in the quantum realm on the edge of, ordinary reality and non-ordinary reality. They may be material, they may be partly partly material, partly spiritual or mental or whatever. I do not think we really know what they are.
And I remember there was one guy in particular, and he was absolutely terrified. And he rang me on Signal. And he was in a park, and he'd literally left the campus of the aerospace company where he was working, walked down the street to a public park, and he was whispering. And I could hear kids playing in the playground. And he started talking about the program and how he'd been invited onto the program. And I said, roll back a little bit. I said, what's the program? And he went, he did laugh. He went, the reverse engineering program. And I said, is this some kind of a hustle? I said, are you winding me up? And he said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean winding up. And I had to explain what winding up meant. And then he told me he was a scientist who was working for an aerospace company, and they were involved in analyzing and attempting to re-engineer non-human technology.
My faith in the government arriving sooner than anyone else is pretty low. Mm. Not that I don't believe in the U.S. government. I was a part of it for 36 years, but government moves slow. There are many stovepipes and red tape, as they call that.
Can we mention the little promo video that we just saw that would be great for people to see? It really speaks to what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've got it on your screen there.
Yeah, this is by Project Unity. We saw this right. A while ago. And you can look up on YouTube the UFO leak of the century. And
Reading Room promo, it's called.
It's only 7.5 minutes long. And right. It really speaks to exactly that.
I like it, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing where they go with it. It's about the Wilson document, and there's clips from Edgar Mitchell talking, like in retrospect.
That's
you can
right.
see he's clearly talking about this on television. There's
you
clips
can
of
see
Stephen.
How uncomfortable he is, but that right. but you can see how these guys put this all together.
Stephen Greer's in there.
Kudos to them.
Maybe you can just help me clarify something, because when I was doing some background research on you, I came across a fascinating little segment from a documentary. It was a segment of an interview that you had in 1989 with a man called Bob Exler. Do you remember speaking to a man called Bob Exler?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and during this conversation, he asked you whether you believed that the recovered vehicles would ever be made available for technical research outside of the military circles. And your response to this was, 10 years ago, I would have said no, but whether time has evolved and they're beginning to become more open on it, it's a possibility. So obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like you're suggesting here that you're aware of retrieved UFOs being studied by the military.
No, the answer was no. We're not. Absolutely, we're no retrieved UFOs. I have high confidence.
Do you anticipate that any of the recovered vehicles would ever become available for technological research outside of the military circles?
Again, I honestly don't know. 10 years ago, the answer would have been no.
Yeah.
Whether as time has evolved, they're beginning to become more open on it. Is a possibility.
Seems like you're suggesting here that you're aware of retrieved UFOs being studied by the military.
No, the answer was no. I would not. We're not. Absolutely, we're no retrieved UFOs. I have high confidence.
You can do some homework here, and there are people that have this ability to tap into whatever we want to call it, the other side, where people go when they die, whatever that is, the energy that people leave behind. There's a lot of ways to explain it, but it was real, and real to us. I mean, she had real experiences. It was affecting her. And we, through a lot of therapy, we were able to basically have her. Now she's 13. She became adjusted and has kind of dealt with that. She sort of suppressed it, actually, which is okay. I mean, she's only 13. We can take a pause and help her develop as a person and human before coming to grips with that incredible ability.
Do you know about the Marilyn Monroe letter and the wiretap?
No, yeah, tell me about this.
I think it was released through FOIA. It was definitely authenticated. There was a released wiretap from one of her phones in her apartment where it was basically relaying information that she'd been giving to an investigative journalist on the phone and talking about basically booking this tell-all press conference about the Kennedy brothers and strange things going on in space, or like something said in a very Marilyn Monroe way about like weird things that they told her about space and about the moon and things. And then literally, I think it was like the date of the wiretap, like 2 days later, she was dead, man.
It is my personal belief that there are residents, visitors, and strangers. Residents being, I believe, entities that have been here long before humanity appeared, and in fact may have had some hand in making us who we are today. Otherwise, we'd still be primates with bonobos, chimpanzees, and gorillas. We're not. We've been elevated. And I believe it is the residents who did this.
There will be, and there are ongoing different types of disclosures. So when we see this, what's happening right now, I've also discussed it as a military type of disclosure. But, you know, there are also, there is a Vatican disclosure, but they're not going to do press releases. You know, this is not how the disclosure of, you know, maybe other countries and other institutions, like religious institutions. It's, you know, people who are interested need to be aware of that the disclosure that they're expecting, it's going to take a different form for different institutions. and everybody's excited about this type of military disclosure, or what, you know, whatever they call it, you know, because it's a site of absolute contention right now. And I think that, you know, the things that are going on quietly, this is something that I learned with working with Tyler D for the years that I worked with him, is this idea that what's really happening is all the very important things that are happening, the changes that are being done, they're going to be behind the scenes. They're going to be invisible almost.
Being a very multi-layered phenomenon, that we should not accept what we are being told at face value. There are many good reasons, as I've covered in the past, both in writing and in documentary form, why the US government or any other government would want to hide stuff behind the UFO phenomenon. And it clearly has done that. We know from the 50s and 60s onwards that the CIA in particular was keen to hide aerospace developments like the U-2 spy plane and the A-12 spy plane, the SR-71, behind the UFO phenomenon. And just because things have become a little bit more open now, there's no reason to suppose that that obfuscation and that hiding of tech behind the UFO phenomenon should cease. So I think we need to be careful.
With respect to the government, I don't think, personally, I don't believe in conspiracies within government. I do think that the government is very often incompetent. That I do think. So it's possible that data was collected. And the reason it was not revealed is because it was collected by sensors that are classified. Okay, so the government is always trying to hold on to the data that it has, because otherwise adversaries, other nations will know what kind of instruments we're using to monitor the sky, okay, in the US.
I appreciate you not wanting to entertain, conspiracy theories, but I think, you know, it's fair to say the government has had its fair share of conspiracies, Iran-Contra, Watergate, Pentagon Papers, and this was actually something I wanted to bring up with you, and I know we're nearing the end, so I'll maybe ask one more question after this, but this is something I wanted to bring up with you. Because over the years, we've had some very interesting statements from incredibly high-level individuals on the topic of material acquisition and technological exploitation of non-human assets. In plain English, the issue of reverse engineering retrieved vehicles or technologies. And there are a few prominent examples of individuals that have strengthened this idea that perhaps non-human technologies are being studied in extreme secrecy within the world of sensitive aerospace programs. So there is one example, Ben Rich, former director of Lockheed Martin's Advanced Projects Department, known as the Skunk Works. And he once said during a 1993 alumni speech at UCLA, "We already have the means to travel among the stars, but these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to ever get them out to benefit humanity. Anything you can imagine, we already know how to do." So that's coming from one of the directors of the Skunk Works. Another prominent example is Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, former director of Naval Intelligence and the National Security Agency, deputy director of the DIA and the CIA, as well as later becoming the president of Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC. Now, he once acknowledged to a man named Bob Exler on the record back in the 1980s, and there is an audio recording of this conversation, but there were such programs in action that were dealing with retrieved or non-human vehicles. He highlighted his doubts as to whether these programs or these vehicles would ever come to light. And the last example I'll provide before I ask you my question comes from a colleague of mine, a very well-known Australian investigative reporter, Ross Coulthart. He was very fortunate to connect with and meet a former director of the US Navy's entire science and technology division, a man named Nat Kobitz. He was unfortunately dying of cancer when he reached out to Ross, and he is sadly no longer with us. But Ross spoke with him multiple times and eventually asked Nat if he'd ever been read in to UFO retrieval or reverse engineering programs.
to which Nat acknowledged that he had, that he was aware of multiple craft being retrieved and studied, and that he'd better not say anything else because he was never read out of these programs. And he also did say to Ross that he was exposed to anomalous materials that seemed to share similarities with the meta materials currently being studied by Gary Nolan and Jacques Vallée. So I guess you have kind of answered my question in with your perspective on this, but just given the kind of credibility of these types of individuals, and there are other statements, do you think that there's a possibility that actually the US government does have these things and they've just kept it very tightly under wraps?
Well, everything is possible. You know, I respond to that in a similar way to my response to, you know, the classified data that we've never seen. I didn't see the classified data, maybe of much higher quality and very highly respected individuals that had access to that data, spoke about it as a serious matter. And of course, psychologically, that's very intriguing for me. And that's why I established the Galileo Project. But, you know, as a kid, I want to put my hands on something like that before I believe it. I want to see it. I want to use my instruments to detect it. I want to see it in front of me. And I haven't seen it. So all I can say is that it's very intriguing. And maybe it's true, maybe not. But we cannot rely on what people say, because, you know, people sometimes have other motives. They can say things without justification.
It's why it is like the biggest taboo, right? Mm-hmm. It is like radioactive to a lot of existing patterns of belief. So it's no surprise why it is among the, you know, hardest topics to broach in serious discourse, because everyone sort of has this implicit, maybe explicit sense that if you venture too far into that domain, you're in dangerous water. And, you know, you don't know where it's going to end up taking you. And fundamentally, most people are risk averse. And unless they absolutely need to understand it, whether it's from a national security perspective or personal psychological experience that needs to be reconciled, or just insatiable intellectual curiosity, you know, the default human reaction is going to be retreat and, you know, denial until it's forced as a you know, inevitable thing to be reconciled.
There was an Amazonian tribesman on a podcast not that long ago, and he was a straight tribesman. Like, he was in the Amazon basin. They didn't have a connection to modern culture, and these podcasters had basically found these guys and got them on for an interview, and they brought up the question of aliens, and they had no concept of what that really meant. They didn't understand what alien was. What do you mean, extraterrestrial? I'm not sure. They showed them a picture of a gray, and the tribesman went, "Oh, that's Makanwabu." Say again.
Makanwabu.
Sério?
Makanwabu.
Yeah, Makanwabu. It's an ant. It's a human that became an ant, and it lives in the underworld, and it can steal your soul, and you need a good shaman to bring you back. That's what they said. So they have a mythos on something that a lot of people would consider to just be a Hollywood archetype, right? But then you've got the Amazonian tribes people talking about Makanwabu, and you've got the Aboriginal Australians who've got their cave paintings that I'm sure a lot of you have seen, which are questionable. And there's actually some pretty questionable Egyptian pottery as well that seems to look like the Nazca mummies that we're finding now in South America. So it's a fascinating thing that this seems to be a material and immaterial element at the same time. And that's actually why I call my YouTube channel Project Unity, because I believe in a symbiosis between spirit and science. I think these are just two different ways of observing the same state of play.
As long as our existence depends on others, we are all slaves in everything but name. They don't dare call us that for the revolution that caused. However, as long as your and my existence depends on others, we, my brothers, are nothing more but slaves, nothing more. We may not like to hear it, but when is the last time, for example, if you truly wanted to do what you wanted to do, how long could you survive in this world? The world is structured to keep our intellect, our ability to think,
jail. There's a reason for that. We're all slaves, brother. Truly. And I don't mean to sound negative, even though that is my... I've started to come to a realization. I have a very negative nature. But that's because I think I've reached a certain understanding of things that has just put me in that predicament. I hate sounding negative. But if things are not done or said or allowed to be said, I do not see a good end to us. To happen, I think we will undergo a trial by fire. Some of us may not come on. But whatever remains, the greatness of that civilization, unfathomable. But right now, we are interlocked in a war, brother. Mm-hmm. A war between good and evil. And I'm not sure if we're... rather, good is winning. Put it that way. I 100% think that there have been great advanced civilizations way before. Again, maybe, just maybe, our civilization will not make the mistakes of the past. Something in me says that good will triumph in the end. It has to. There is God, the super intelligence of the universe here, that we're talking about. Not an artificially created, but the God of all gods. It exists, brother. It's in every and each and every. We all important, man. We all, again, all is one. And one is all. Do you realize that our, in antiquity, a lot of stuff has been lost?
So much.
Can you imagine the mysteries within the Library of Alexandria? Dude, why? Why? It's as if mankind reaches a certain level of information, knowledge, and then something happens to take that away. Fire of the Library of Alexandria is extremely questionable, to say the least.
How is it legal for a religious institute of this power to have access to secret history, to classified history?
Not, brother. It's not. Human beings, we should be privy to certain knowledge, but we're not, because certain people want to stay in power. And knowledge is power, brother.
It's hard not to get a little bit upset over it, because you just feel like there's such huge gaps, such huge vacuums of knowledge that might actually be capable of being filled in if we had all of the pieces of the puzzle. And you know, I really think some of the most critical pieces have been put under lock and key, whether it's...
Be careful with that, though, bro. Careful with that. You might want to scratch this out, this particular... Yeah, be careful with that. This is between you and I, yeah.
All right.
They might reach out to you in certain ways. I dare not say certain things on the podcast, but you know I'm thinking them. You know I'm thinking them. Seems that certain elements want us to forget who we truly are.
Mm-hmm.
The power that's within us is infinite, bro. Every one of us, every soul in this world has significance. But some would have us believe that more souls are more important than others. There are things we do not understand. What we call supernatural may not be supernatural at all. It's just one thing of the many. But it had the ability to enslave us. Somehow. Possibly for our own volition. Somehow it overcame the greatness within us. Again, the statement that we're all slaves is so freaking negative. Extremely negative. Because remember Spartacus. Rome was one step away from not being because of that rebellion. Every one of us has an infinitude of possibilities in us. The trick is to recognize it. And it's not a trick. See, it's just, again, Graham Hancock's idea of amnesia on a civilizational level. What if it's brought down on an individual level? It's as if we, our soul, has amnesia.